Welcome back to Hunter Logan Unmiked. I am Hunter Logan. Now, the last episode we left off, I had just quit the band that I had, went into doing a single gig. I was sequencing, playing my guitar along with it, working with my buddy who had got me into it. And then I realized that I could just be about anywhere I wanted to. I didn't have to live in New Orleans. So I made the decision to move back to Jennings. And once doing that, this would be the last time that I moved back to Jennings, and I've been here ever since. But the whole time I was in New Orleans playing, I'd made a fan, or two, or three. But I made this one special fan. And she was a sweet, dear, dear lady who became a dear friend. She has since passed away. We stayed in contact after I gave my life back to Christ. We still stayed in contact, not as much, but we did as much as we could. But she had got a settlement, and she was so generous to Hunter Logan and his music career. She had signed me up for this contest in Branson, Missouri. Now, at the time, I didn't know anything about the contest stuff, how this stuff worked. I would find out later on that anytime you have to pay money, that's usually not a good thing. When you have to pay money to people to put your song on something, like for a contest, that's usually not legit. If you're paying a small amount for an entry fee, that's different than paying $500-$600 to enter in for to win a recording contract, to that kind of stuff, or at a chance to compete for this or that. That's all money making stuff. Well, she signed me up. I think it was like $500 for this event. And you go to Branson, Missouri, and you compete. If you do good there, then you go on to Nashville, right? And you compete in Nashville. Well, I'm like, okay, that's fine, if that's what you want to do. I mean, hey, why not? Because at this point in time, any opportunity is an opportunity. I've already got my second CD out, and I'm working a label. I've started my record label by this point. I'm producing, writing songs, publishing. I got everything going, man. I am building. I'm building a record label, publishing company. I'm doing my own distributing, getting stuff into Walmart, not only for myself, but for the artist, which at that time was a pretty big deal. So I'm making things happen. We travel up to Branson, Missouri. Once you sing, they go into a room and you meet with some individual who is a, I don't know, they got some title or something. And then they begin to tell you, they give you a sales pitch. Well, you know, you did really good. Now, for $300, if you do this, you can. And for $500, you can do this and you can go on to. And that's when I realized, I'm like, listen. So I get kind of ugly with the guy. I say, this is a racket. And he just kind of looks at me. I said, no, I said, this is a racket. I said, y'all making money off of people. I said, y'all don't have any plans on doing anything. I said, but taking money from people, because they're all starry-eyed, thinking they're going to get something, promising them something in Nashville. You know, they're going to be left holding nothing. But what I didn't know is that my fan had already paid for me to go to Nashville. So I was already set to go to Nashville regardless. I'm like, oh, man. And on the way back, I'm saying, you know, I wish you wouldn't have did that. I'm like, that was a waste of money. I mean, but she didn't know any better. She thought she was helping my career. She said, well, it's already paid for. We got to go. And I'm like, yeah, we'll go. She said, well, don't worry about it. She said, well, go see Nashville. I'm like, okay. So on the way back, we're coming down through Arkansas. And there's this RV, this big bus looking RV, for sale on the side of the road. She says, "Hunter, that's what you need right there." I'm like, "Yeah, it'd be nice, man. I could put all the music equipment underneath the bays," because it had the bays underneath. I said, "That would be the way to travel. You know, to just travel anywhere." I said, "Sleep on, you know, wherever you had to sleep, and then make it on to the next gig." Because at this point in time, we're in a 1989 Dodge Caravan, and that's what I'm traveling in, with the back seat out to load the equipment in. And that's what we're in this particular trip. She said, "Pull over." Turn back around. She called the number, called the guy out to it, and she paid for it right there. She said, "I'll take it." And I'm like, "What?" So my fan bought me an RV. I kid you not. It was nice, too. Man, it was a 34-foot. Huge, but it wasn't small either. And I would have this thing to go on the road. In fact, I would end up taking it to Nashville. I was like, "Wow, you gotta be kidding me." So I'm thinking, man, this is awesome. And of course, I'm thanking her. I'm just like floored, you know, that my fan would do this for me. God rest her soul. She was such a dear, sweet lady. She would come out to every gig when I was in New Orleans. She would come out to every gig that I ever had that was close enough for her to get to. She was just good people. But she bought this RV for me. I named it Annabelle, as a matter of fact. It even had a like a toolbox on the back of it. It was a big chest, so I put Annabelle on the back of it. It became a true road vehicle for the music. And it had the bays underneath, so just like a bus. This thing was just like a bus. So it had empty bays underneath, and that's where I stored all the equipment. The PA would go underneath there, so I didn't have to put anything inside. Man, I went up and down the road in that thing. Was able to play wherever and get, I mean, with the sleep apnea, it was no problem because I could just pull over, go to sleep. So now that we got the RV back in Jennings, we're getting it to Hunter Logan status, I guess you could say. Got to get the name on the side of it, right? It's got to say Hunter Logan on the side of it. And we did that. Just the normal artist stuff. Now, back then, this is 2002 that this is happening. 2001, 2002, around that time. This is an older model RV, so it doesn't look like the buses and the RVs you see today. I say that because it was odd to see something like that turned into a musician-style bus, I guess you could say. So here I am with an RV turning it into like a bus. If that makes any sense, if you can get a picture, a mental picture of that. So off to Nashville we go for the second half of this so-called contest. Now, this was how I would end up working at the Nashville Palace, believe it or not. We're at the hotel, which is, was it Music City Valley? Born Grill, I think it is now. Right across from Caney Fark, the place I like to eat so much, where the catfish swim in, which was the old Nashville Palace. That's where the old Nashville Palace was, is where the Caney Fark River Grill is now in Nashville. And the Music City Valley Inn, that's where it was held. So we're in the room there, and everybody's waiting to sing. Everybody's waiting to sing. The head guy of this thing tells everybody that he's the voice of Affleck, the duck. And I'm like, how do you verify that? Anybody could do the duck voice. I mean, how do you verify that you're that, you know, give us something else. So I'm there and I'm already thinking. And then you got some people in there that really can't sing. I'm not saying I'm the greatest singer. Believe me, I'm not. But there's some people in there that are flat. And they're taking these people's money because they're flat, they're off key. I mean, you're telling me that these people are finalists in Nashville and they're singing flat? Come on. There's no way. There's no possible way that these people are finalists in Nashville and they're singing flat. And that's why I said this contest was a joke. It was a moneymaker. You got people believing that they're good. It's kind of like some of the stuff that goes on in Christian country today with some of these folks. Yeah, I said it. So they couldn't finish everyone that day. So you had to come back the next morning to finish the rest. Well, I was in the rest. I'm aggravated. So we walk across the street to the Nashville Palace. There's a live band. I'm ready to have a steak and some wild turkey and seven. They got a live band there. I'm good with that. The waitress comes by, takes the order. She said, what are y'all here for? Is y'all first time here? Like, yeah, we're here for a singing thing. Da, da, da. She says, you should enter the contest tonight. There's a talent contest here. They do. I'm like, no, that's okay. I had enough contests. She said, no, seriously. If you win, you get to come back and sing. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine, whatever. You know, I don't think so. Well, by the time I got done eating, I done pounded a few wild turkeys and seven. I guess I'm feeling a little good. Kind of aggravated still, the whole thing. And the band's really good. I'm like, what the heck? I'll go up there. Probably never get to sing with that good of a band again. But yeah, why not? I go up there. I go to sing. He said, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. Let's do Trouble by Travis Tritt. Let's do that. All right. What key? Same key as the record, G. Man, they kicked that sucker off. I was like, oh man. And, I mean, they played it like the record. Those cats. One thing about Nashville cats, man. Everybody plays. And everybody's a great player. You don't necessarily have that everywhere you go. So they started playing. It makes you want to sing. It makes you want to sing the best you can sing. So, man, I got into it. It lit me up. I'm like, woohoo. We got done. I was like, wow. And they said, let's do another one. I'm like, all right. And I said, let's do the chair. What key? Same key as the record. All right. And they kicked that sucker off just like the record. I was like, yeah, dog. I'm thinking to myself, this is insane. This band is unreal. And by the way, that was when Steve Hill had the band there. Come to find out, the drummer was a drummer, the original drummer of Buck Owens and the Buckaroos. The keyboard player was Jerry Reed's keyboard player. The steel player was Ray Price's steel player. The guitar player was the guitar player from it was some band he toured with for 10 years, some name. Those cats were something else. I get down and the waitress comes back and she says, you're going to win. You're going to win. I'm like, yeah, right. Because let me tell you, those folks that sang, they were good too. And I wasn't even paying attention. I didn't even care. I'm drinking. The folks that were sitting at the table with us, we met them. I don't even remember where they were from, but they were funny. We're laughing, cutting up, I don't know, telling jokes and stuff. I don't even remember what the conversation was, really. And all of a sudden, man, they call my name as winner. I'm like, what? Like, you won. I'm like, huh? Oh, and they called me up to do another song. And I'm like, what? Wow. So I go on up, and it is, what did I do? Easy Lovin'. I did Easy Lovin' by Freddie Hart. I didn't do that one in the same key as the record, though. I think I did that one in F sharp. But again, an odd key, but they played it just like the record. I'm like, man, it's insane. I had to come back Thursday night and do a whole set. Which led to working at the Nashville Palace. Here's the thing. You go broke there because you make union scale wages, which was like 42 something. 42 and some change. $42 and some change. And staying in the RV park was $114 a week, I think. And it didn't add up. When I could play a dive bar and make $300 a night. So I'm like, you know, I'm never going to go any further than this. Like, this would be the pinnacle for me. The Nashville Palace would be as far as I'd ever go. I mean, I did get to meet Vern Gosden. I did get to meet some Hee Haw stars. I did get, you know, that was cool. But that would be the furthest I'd ever go in Nashville. I would never get any higher. And I knew that. I knew I was never going to progress any further than that. I didn't need to be that. Like I said, I never had any delusions of grandeur. Making a living was success for me. If I could just make the living playing music, that was fine with me. It's like back to the bars. Goodbye, Nashville. I'm going to the bars because I could make more money. So I left Nashville and drove to Venice, Louisiana. Made $300. But on my way to Venice, I got a call. Well, I got an email, actually. It wasn't a call. I got an email. I'd sent off a package to Carnival Cruise Lines to be an entertainer on their ship. Because a buddy had told me about the gig. He said, man, if you can get on there, he said, you'll love that gig. He said, it's easy money. He said, the hours are great. He said, it is one of the best gigs around. He said, if you get on. And he said, once you're on, you can stay on as long as you want. He said, you can just go from boat to boat to boat. He said, you can stay on and just entertain and entertain. So I got a press kit together. Now, this was for all the digital press kit stuff. This is when you put the news clippings in. This is when you put the CD in. But you still mailed this stuff in. You didn't send it by email. You mailed this stuff in. I mailed the package in. And I got the response. And he said, hey, we got a spot for you on the Carnival Conquest, which at the time was the biggest ship in the fleet of Carnival. It's not anymore, but at the time it was. Porting out of New Orleans, going to Kingston, Jamaica, then Grand Cayman Islands, and then Cozumel, Mexico, and then coming back. It's a 7-day cruise, and you'll do that for 6 months. I'm like, okay, sign me up. Mister, I can't swim at all. I'm going out on the ocean. Whew, man. Keep in mind, I'm still running a record label at this point. Got a record label, a distribution company, a publishing company, and how am I going to do that being out of the country? Remember I told you how my family was not too keen on what I was doing? They really weren't. There were some specific situations where music got in the way of some things, where family should have came first, and that probably contributed to some of it. But I can remember where my mom, they would say, oh, you're Hunter Logan's mom. And she would just kind of try to play it off and not acknowledge that too much. Because I think she was ashamed of that. Not that she was ashamed of her son, but she wasn't too proud of what he was doing. But I don't think she really understood what I was doing at the time. Until I said, Mom, I'm going to need you to handle this for me while I'm gone. She said, baby, I don't know nothing about the record business at all. I said, I know you don't. I said, but I'm going to give you detailed instructions of what you need to do. I'm going to give you word for word instructions, what you need to do. And I said, I'll be in port every Sunday. And when I'm in port, we can hook up and whatever questions you got, whatever we need to do, we can do. Because I'll have about 8 hours or so, maybe 10 hours, before I got to get back on the ship. Because she lived in Lafitte, and I was porting in New Orleans, so Lafitte ain't but about 30 minutes from the city. So we could have met. Problem was, though, I didn't know this at the time, the water had gotten too low or too high, I can't remember, and we had to port in Biloxi instead of New Orleans. So we ended up porting in Biloxi instead of New Orleans. But I still gave her detailed information, word for word. And when she actually seen that I was working towards something and that I really wasn't playing around, that I was really working and it really was a job and it wasn't just playing music just to play around and not do anything, that I really was trying to work and build something, she became the mom that would defend Hunter Logan or say, yeah, that's my son, because she knew that it was a real business then. She did real good handling all of that. She really did. And she did real good praying for her son, too, to get out of all of that. Because as much as she handled all of that, I know she prayed for her son to get out of all of that. And to get where he is now. I know that. She prayed a lot for me. God answers prayers. Don't forget that, moms and dads. So I'm on the ship, going from port to port, seeing all kind of things, meeting people that I didn't even know existed. Man, there's countries I didn't even know existed. Beautiful people from those countries. It's a culture shock for me. And I'm like, wow. And I'm seeing things that I have never seen before. I mean, I'm like, things that have shocked me. And I'm like, oh, wow. The Caribbean King song that I wrote on my third CD is about being out on the ship. That's a pretty much true story there. You can go find that one if you want. But nonetheless, it was an experience. And while I'm on the ship, I'm communicating with my wife via email because it's about the only way we could communicate, because she's not on the ship with me. She's at home, once again, taking care of the kids, being a single parent. Because remember, I made the selfish decision to pursue music above everything else, putting that first. Now, this woman, my wife, found a way to go to college, raise kids, and make ends meet with whatever I sent back. I'm telling you, she's the greatest woman on earth to me. And I'm thankful every day that God gave me one more chance with her. I'm not going to blow it. I told God I wouldn't, and I'm not. I love that woman with all my heart. She put up with way more than she had to. But God knew that I would need her. He picked her way back when. He picked her to do this ministry with me that we're in now, side by side. But it would be her communication one day where we're conversing, and I didn't know that she would get connected to a lady that lived across from her at the trailer park where they were staying, where they were living. And we're talking like we normally do, and she says, I would appreciate it if you don't use that language anymore, because we're effing this, effing that, and just cussing while we're in the email. She said, I'd appreciate it if you don't use that language anymore, because I don't use it. And I got something else to tell you. I'm going back to church, and I got filled with the Holy Ghost. Or I got refilled with the Holy Ghost. And my next reply is, who is this? Where is my wife, and what have you done with the body? She wrote back, laughing thing, you know. And she tells me what happened. She got into church with a friend that lived next door, asked if I was mad. I said, no, I'm not mad, but I said, keep the church stuff to you. I don't want none of it, because I'm still bitter. I'm still bitter from all the stuff, still a little bit. Not as bad as I was, but still, from what happened back from the divorce, from the way the church treated my mom. Because life with the church stopped at me at 14, as far as that goes. It really stopped for me at 14 with the church. Remember, I've been playing around, and at 18, I said, okay, God, I'll quit playing around. I'll either serve you or I won't. Said that in one of those earlier episodes, and I didn't. But I was getting tired of the ship, too. It was starting to close in. That big old ship wasn't as big as it was. And I don't know if people were praying for me to get off of that thing. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't getting fun anymore. Playing wasn't fun anymore. Although there was a new crop of people every week, I'm working with the same people, and I'm going through the same routine, and it's getting old. And I got to looking at myself, reflecting. And I'm realizing that this is as far as I'm going to go in the music business. This is it. And the guy who is my inspiration for me wanting to be in the music business is the very inspiration for me getting out of the music business for performing. Because I didn't want to be 70 some odd years old still singing in the clubs, which this guy is still doing. He's got to walk up there with a walker. Then he got to be sat down to sing. Still got a voice, though. I got to give it to him. He still got his voice. He still can sing, but it's pitiful. It's pitiful. It's pitiful looking. And I didn't want to be that. So we came in to port. I emailed my wife. I said, listen, I can come back home, be Mr. Mom, get some local bar gigs or just get some gigs around there, play on the weekend. I'll be Mr. Mom. You can go back to school. You can graduate, get your degree, and you can concentrate on school. I'll be Mr. Mom. And I said, I'm not going to church with you, but I mean, I'll do all that stuff for you if you want. She said, yeah, that would be great. That'd be great. I said, okay, I'll wrap it up here on the boat. I'll let you know when you can come pick me up. But I didn't know that she was planning on leaving me, even though she was in church. And even though I would come back and get back in church with her, she was still planning on leaving. I didn't know that at the time. Her plan was to graduate and leave me and make a life for herself, which she had every right to. As far as I'm concerned, all the stuff I had done and put her through, she deserved that. She deserved a life, a better one than I'd given her at this point. I wouldn't have blamed her at all. I would have blamed me. I thank God every day that it didn't come to that. That he did a miracle and gave me a chance. One more chance to keep that woman and repair our marriage. Because he did it in the darker times. Which the darker times is where we're getting ready to start on the next podcast. That's going to be season 2. This is going to wrap it up for season 1. This is the end of season 1. Season 2, we're going to be in the darker years. That's where I start to reap all the bad seeds that were sown. But I also start sowing the good seeds as well. Hey, thanks for hanging in there with me. Podcast is available wherever podcasts are. Stitcher, podcast.co, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Deezer, Acast, TuneIn, Breaker. And anywhere you can find another podcast, they're there. You can even get it on our website, hleradio.com. Don't forget to check out our morning show, Monday through Friday. Check out HLE Radio at hleradio.com. Hey, until next time, stay safe. We'll see you again.